thanks for being here.
Anyway, so we made her know.
No, I was on the freeway and it's really dark.
And then we literally were like,
and I got off the freeway
and it had like,
and I took video and it was packed. And
okay, what did I do with it?
It was real.
Sorry,
like this.
You guys are hearing
okay, where'd it go?
I noticed that you waste more money. I mean, you waste more gasoline if you take the trains.
Yeah.
So then when I saw my gas meter, I was like, no.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We now have a full house for our commissioners, so we are going to get started. Okay. Just wanted to check on that. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the meeting of the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners in the area here of Sunland Dahunga Neighborhood Council, and today is the 22nd day of February. If you're not on a mailing list and would like to add your name and become more involved in the Neighborhood Council system, please sign up at the table located, where is it, Mike? Where is it?
Right over there.
Okay, over on my left, thank you. During the meeting tonight, we will discuss items listed on the meeting agenda in numerical order. Unless I receive a request from a board member to take an item on the agenda out of order, copies of the agenda and related documents are available for you on the table located over to my left. Members of the public who wish to speak on agenda items shall be allowed to speak for a total of 5 minutes per meeting and may allocate time in 1 minute increments per item when the agenda item is called. Or they may speak during the multiple agenda item comment period. During the multiple agenda item comment period, a member of the public may speak for up to 5 minutes on multiple agenda items. If any board member has a conflict of interest at the time an agenda item is announced for discussion, the board member should identify the general nature of the conflict, indicate that he or she are recusing him or herself from participating in the matter, and leave the room during the duration of the discussion of the item. Before we make a decision on any item, members of the public are provided with the opportunity to provide comments on the item under consideration. If you have a general comment on an item that is not listed on the agenda, then you may provide us with your comment during the public comments period of the meeting. Public comment should be directed to the board rather than to individuals. Please understand that there are applicable laws that limit the actions we may take on a concern that you expressed. Thus, we may be legally prohibited from acting on a concern you expressed. However, note that your concern may become the topic of discussion at a future board meeting after we've had a chance to list the item on the agenda. Please fill out a speaker card or card so that you may be heard on any agenda item or items. You will be called by me when it's your turn to speak. Please be sure to place the name of the item or items you wish to speak about on the card or cards. Copies of the speaker cards are located on the table again to my left. If you intend to speak on any item or items, you must turn in your speaker card or cards prior to the start of the meeting or prior to the call of the item. Please hand the speaker card to, who's gonna get it tonight?
Mario.
Mike, huh?
Mario.
Mario? Okay, Mario is seated to my left. When a person is speaking, they're entitled to courtesy and respect. Please refrain from any other discussion in the room. If you wish to chat, then please take that discussion outside while our meeting is in session. We treat one another with respect. That means we act with civility and decorum. Competing viewpoints may be articulated without the need for inappropriate or uncivil actions. Last but not least, please switch your cell phone ringers to off or vibrate if you haven't already done so. Thank you. Mario, who's gonna call the roll?
I'll call.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Schaefer?
Here.
Commissioner Atkinson? Absent. Commissioner Derek Quiroz?
Here.
Commissioner LaFarga? Commissioner Littman? Commissioner Sinclair?
Here.
And Commissioner Webb?
Here.
Webb?
Okay, we do have a quorum. One of our commissioners may have to leave early. So we're going to do a couple of things as far as rearranging the agenda as we go along. But we will get to it because I want to get the business done as fast as possible. All right. I have a card for number 3, has a CIS or resolution been filed with the commission with regards to that specific, to any specific agenda item? You have a card for number 3. Is it an item that is on our agenda tonight?
No, it's a community.
It's what?
It's a community.
And it's with regards to one of our agenda items?
No.
Oh, okay. It would have to be with regards to an item that's listed or being considered on this agenda.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I spoke
wrong.
I thought it was...
No, it's not just any. Okay. That's what I wondered. Thank you.
It is on something.
It is. Okay.
It
is on online voting number 10. Okay, come on up, and this will then handle your...
I'll just speak for my one
minute. Wait a minute, you said on item number...
Online.
Yeah, but it's item number... number 13 is what you're addressing?
No, I want to bring to the attention of Bonk a community impact statement that was posted by a neighborhood council that is not right.
Okay. It has to be with regards to an item on our agenda.
Yes, and it is, but I don't want to give up my time to speak on that agenda
You get to speak one of two times. And you get the 5 minutes this time, and you're only going to get a more limited time if you speak to item 13 individually. So take your choice. Okay. You want us, okay, you filed a CIS as to item number, I'll give her that, 13. Okay. I'll put that. Okay. We'll throw that out and we'll get rid of that. All right. Okay. Is there anyone who wishes to speak during the multiple agenda items comment period? Who has multiple agenda items that have been filed? Have you filed for multiple, sir? Okay. 11 and 12, okay, this would be your time to speak as to each of those rather than at the time they're called. Do you have any others, Mr. Hall? That's it?
Okay. Okay, Dunn is very much in need of additional staffing, and I support the request for budgetary funding for additional personnel. My experience as a citizen, as a neighborhood council board member, and as a neighborhood council subdivision formation committee member has been, as often as not, to have voicemail messages not responded to, email communications ignored, and where response times are specified in Dunn procedures or by law, not to be adhered to. Increased staffing is obviously needed if Dunn is to function properly. Both lack of adequate staffing and staff training is abundantly evident in Dunn's handling of the 3 neighborhood council subdivision submittals that they received in 2016. The ordinance language recommending a minimum number of 20,000 residents was met by none of the 3 applicants. If you look at the comparison document I prepared, and I think each of you has one, you'll note that no applicant could demonstrate those 20,000 residents. Dunn, however, reformulated this requirement in its documentation as 20,000 stakeholders, a number claimed by Skid Row, but without any backup documentation. Hermon and Laurel Grove both claimed an exception to the 20,000 minimum based on city recognition of their neighborhoods that included facilities providing city services, a school or a park, whatever. However, Dunn's staff instead chose to require that the proposed areas be separated from adjacent communities by significant geographic features. Please review either the ordinance or Dunn language on page 2 of my handout. Such a geographic test is a sufficient requirement, but not a necessary one. The requirements are strung together by the English word or. Any one requirement will suffice. In a conversation with my council member, Paul Krikorian, he agreed that in fact, or means or. Furthermore, the Dunn letter to Hermon accepting their application states that the geographic test is what was submitted to gain that acceptance. My California Public Records Act request to Dunn of all Hermon's submittals regarding their subdivision application shows no such filing for geographic exception. Indeed, the application review process appears to have been simply made up on the fly. Upon receipt of the letter from Dunn rejecting the Laurel Grove application, Laurel Grove made a request to the Dunn general manager to meet and discuss the rejection. The meeting request was ignored. Laurel Grove subsequently submitted copious documentation substantiating the validity of our initial application. This submittal was rejected in turnaround fashion in a letter from the general manager that included the advice that in the future we need, and here's the quote, to work with our staff before you submit the petition so we can ensure that all the subdivision criteria are met. This is exactly what we tried to do, but we were ignored and we were stonewalled. This board is granted in the city charter the responsibility to set policy and policy oversight with respect to neighborhood councils. There is no reason why Dunn, at this point and at your urging, should not again review the Laurel Grove Neighborhood Council submission application and this time work with the applicant and adhere to established criteria. Have you been paying attention, Mr. Schaefer?
I'm taking notes.
Oh, very good. The handout that I gave will show the actual application responses of the three subdivision applicants. And you'll note that Skid Row claiming 20,000 gives no documentation for that. But in all of, as far as population goes, in all of Council District 14, the number of homeless in the 2015 count was only 6,000. Of the three.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I know. Of the three neighborhood council submittals, the Laurel Grove one had by far the largest population.
Thank you. Okay. Moving forward then, number 5, minutes from our meeting of February 7th. Do we have a motion? First, does anybody have any additions or corrections? It's stapled, but keep going. There you go. Huh? No, that's it. It's connected to the agenda.
Oh. Sorry, I wasn't at the meeting, so I'm not able to move.
Or second.
I wasn't at the meeting either.
Anybody? Well, I was there. I don't have any additions or corrections.
I wasn't at the meeting. Can I second? Or would
I tell you what I'm going to do. I tell you what I'm going to do. I've got two commissioners who were not at the meeting who apparently don't feel they can participate, and we all know if they abstain, it's a yes vote. So why don't we table these minutes until our next meeting? Somebody want to make a motion to table?
Commissioner Maggie Derrick Quiroz, I will make a motion that we table the minutes from February 22nd to the next meeting.
From February 7th.
Oh, February 7th.
Can I have a second?
Commissioner Sinclair, I second.
Any objection? No objection. Matter is tabled. Okay. We're going to skip number 6 for the moment. And okay, there's two things that I definitely want to get. And if there's no objection, just in case we lose a quorum, I'm going to move number 12 up at this time. I'm sorry that Gracie's not here. I will try and explain this particular item as best as possible, and then make a motion with regards to it. The department has been working with the Emergency Management Department on the issue of emergency preparedness. And one of the issues that always comes up has to do with neighborhood councils and emergency supply bins throughout the city. The city attorney having spoken about issues of liability. And we're trying to find a way to get those bins out there via city departments. So a multi-departmental budgetary request has been made. Unfortunately, it has not been met with the greatest of enthusiasm by the powers that be. At least that's the report I've been getting. And it's for $192,000, which would staff two employees at Neighborhood Empowerment and two employees at Emergency Management Department. It would also go to translation of documents and a certain amount of outreach. And those four persons would be dedicated to emergency preparedness and specifically trying to get initially 35 of these emergency bins throughout the city, which neighborhood councils have been working on for a number of years now. That's not the only thing they would be doing, but that's one of the first things they would look at. What this motion would do, and I'll go through it in a minute, would be that if it were passed, that the commission would support this request and direct that a letter be written to the mayor with regards to the board's approval, if there is approval, and that letter would be returned to the commission at its next meeting for approval. Okay, so we're gonna, so in order to facilitate that, I am going to make the motion. Oh, and let me put two other things very quickly. One, this motion has been adopted by the budget advocates, and it will be included in their presentation to the budget committee. And it was originally brought up before and passed by the Neighborhood Council Emergency Preparedness Alliance. And that's where the language came from. So two alliances have passed it, and it has gone out to numerous, to all the neighborhood councils to see if they'll react to it. So I would make a motion that the commission send a letter to the mayor in support of the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment's multi-departmental budget item of $192,000 in the 2017-2018 city budget. That budget item will cover the cost of two staff members for the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment and two staff members for the Emergency Management Department and related expenses to draft a disaster preparedness plan. Upon passage of the item, the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners President shall draft a written communication to the mayor reflecting the board's approval of the motion. The draft will be reviewed at the next Neighborhood Commissioners, Board of Neighborhood Commissioners meeting.
Commissioner Wehby, I'd like to second that motion and ask for a point of clarification on the statement.
Absolutely.
And
okay.
The two Dunn employees would be in addition to the current number of Dunn employees?
Yes, it would be in addition to not only the current, it would be in addition to those who are requested to increase the staff. In other words, this is a totally separate item.
Thank you.
So far as I think, I heard a very strange thing that they did, but never mind. So that's where we are. Before we get to discussion, we have one speaker card. Cindy?
Cindy Cleghorn, San Lantanga. Just really quick, where's the $192,000 coming from? Is there grant monies for this, or does this come when you say interdepartmental sharing? I would specifically like to know where the 192 comes from, because there are many, many grants out there for emergency preparedness, and I certainly hope it's not coming from the department's budget. Thank you.
It's a budgetary item, therefore it would come from the budget with regards to these two departments. I will state for clarification, it is a budget item in addition to any other budgetary items requested by the department. Which means if it's not approved, those two employees aren't approved. Discussion by the commission. Questions?
Commissioner Sinclair, are these four employees, will they solely be dedicated to supporting neighborhood councils in those plans, or are their job description seems not very elaborate right now?
They're going to be dedicated to emergency preparedness, and their first job will be with regards to the emergency bins. Our hope is that they will work with neighborhood councils in the area of emergency preparedness, such as working with the ham radio operators that the city has, and with the various agencies that are concerned with emergency preparedness.
Okay.
Anybody else? All right. Motion. You want to put in a speaker card after you're done? Okay. Just so we have it for the record.
Pat Kramer, I'm on the Alliance of Neighborhood Councils for Emergency Preparedness, which Len is also the chair of. I think it's really an important thing to allocate monies for emergency preparedness. In this day and age, Our city really needs to be on top of this, and we don't want to wait till there's a disaster and find out we're not prepared. We're making great strides with the Alliance for Neighborhood Councils planning for emergency preparedness, but I don't see a plan within the city that connects all the dots. So I just want to say I'm in support of anything that we can do to be better prepared. And I know that the Emergency Management Department is short-staffed right now, and I don't think it really should be. I think we should allocate funds to be prepared for anything that might happen. You know, we have to be prepared for a disaster, and the way things are going, you know, I think it's probably imminent we're going to have an earthquake, and we want to be prepared in advance. So I just wanted it on the record. Thank you.
Okay. Over there. Bob Bischoff? Brostov. I'm thinking of somebody else. I'm sorry. Bob?
Just a brief comment. I am a member of the Emergency Council Alliance. I was at the last meeting and I voted in favor of this motion from the Alliance. I want to say that we had probably the largest turnout we've ever had at that meeting, and it was a unanimous vote in favor of this proposal.
Commissioner Wehby, one more question.
Okay.
Are there more specifics, perhaps, that would enter the letter? I understand for the point of this agenda, we can't get into a lot of specifics, but you know the detail that was stated earlier that it would be a separate budget item, and or separate individuals added on, and that this is an additional budget piece that's going into, I mean, the specifics of what we would be supporting as commissioners, and that these materials and information would go through the neighborhood councils. Has it been vetted? I mean, has it been really fleshed out that much?
If you read the department's budget, their budget proposal, this is a specific item within that proposal, and it spells out things within that. And that's what we're going on. We're supporting that particular budget item. So it's actually in that large, voluminous
Commissioner Shaver,
document.
Can I chime in
and
for a couple
I
seconds?
I certainly appreciate all the work of program. The Alliance and everything that has been done.
No, that's the book. And unfortunately, I gave my copy to the general manager of EMD, and there are no more of those, but it is online. Mike, you remember which item it is?
Yes, it's it's page 69 of the proposed budget for the department. And the list of services, briefly, is outreach to neighbor councils, the Neighbor Council Emergency Preparedness Alliance, the Neighbor Council Sustainability Alliance, for them to submit jumpstart plans for their communities, include outreach to community groups and neighbor councils, and to help them develop their emergency preparedness plans, and to also work with the LA Fire Department CERT program, and to work on the emergency bin program.
Well, thank you. That's very helpful. Okay. I appreciate that clarification.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, because that's the specific item that it refers to. All right. With that, somebody want to call the roll? Well, better yet, I'll just say.
We just make it available for people to see.
Okay.
It would be a good idea.
Yeah. I did have a copy of, as I say, I gave my book to Mr. Sahakian at a meeting, and that's after that I found out from Gracie Liu that there just were no more of those. But at least he's got it.
Thank you.
So I'll now call for, unless somebody has a problem, I'll call for a vote with regards to this. Do we need a roll call, or can I just say those in favor? Those in favor? Any objection? No objection. Matter passes. Okay. We are now going to move on to, just to make sure, because I know there's a number of you are here, and I want to make sure we keep our quorum. And we have Mr. Box here for this particular item. And this is item number 13. This was an item that was requested by one of our commissioners, so we got it on here. And Stephen, before you start, we have two public comments. Okay, Steve.
I'm back. Hey, Stephen Box with the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment, I'm Director of Outreach and Communications, and the Senior Project Coordinator. So on behalf of Gracie Liu, who is double booked tonight, Council File 15-1022-S2 was delivered to the City Council, which was a report of online voting in the 2016 elections. And so there were some recommendations, and the recommendations, you should have a one sheet, mm-hmm. and there's a stack of one sheets here if anyone would like to look at it. But there were six recommendations that came out of it. So the report was kind of exhaustive and went council by council, topic by topic, with regards to the online elections throughout the city of Los Angeles. And so there were some obstacles, there were some hiccups, there were some revisions, there were some modifications. It's everything you would expect from the initial rollout of anything. Which included feedback from the first round of elections and adjustments made along the way. And some of them were innovations such as the pop-up polls, where not only did we have the online voting available on your mobile device, your phone, your tablet, or a desktop at home, but we set up very simple pop-up polls so that folks could just register and vote right there. At the location, and it was really simple to staff. It wasn't as complicated as a traditional polling location. And then, of course, we had the traditional polls. But the six recommendations are to clarify and simplify the journey with regards to identification and standardize it so that you would prove your identity, and then it would be self-affirmation for how you qualify. So the City of Los Angeles and the 96th Neighborhood Council has hundreds of categories. Some neighborhood councils have a president, some have chairs, and West Hills, not to be outdone, has co-chairs. But it gets a little more specific when you get past the basic executive officers, and so we've got many neighborhood councils with seats for which there's no comparable seat in the other neighborhood councils. And so the point is that helping folks figure out how to vote is often an uphill battle when someone is registering for a seat, registering to vote, and their qualification is kind of a complicated one they hadn't heard of before. For example, if you own a home, how many people carry the deed to their home or their, it's true, I mean, I have to go look these things up. And so the documentation for the different seats gets a little complicated. In the spirit of engaging folks, and encouraging them to vote, because some of the frustration for voters was it's not worth the hassle. So number one was just to simplify and standardize the process. So for online voting, they would prove their identity, and it would be self-affirmation for how they qualified to vote, whether it was live, work, own, or participate in an ongoing and significant fashion. The second one is to standardize the citywide voting age to 16. So the city has engaged in a few different campaigns to engage youth. And in fact, some of the great stories of how people get involved in the political process or civic engagement or working for City Hall is that at a young age they were activated. You can go to Boys State, you can go to Girls State, you can do a whole lot of great things. Why can't you get involved in your neighborhood council throughout the city? And one of the problems we encountered in engaging youth with the civic youth campaign, for example, is we engage youth that then couldn't go home and get involved because their council happened to be an 18. So we've had as low as 14. This California State Assembly honored, in fact, one of our neighborhood council board members. It was a 14-year-old who brought such a fresh perspective to her community and the neighborhood council and was all fired up and excited to be a part of it, that she energized the board. And they did some great stuff, and the assembly actually honored her for bringing in her fresh perspective on technology and engaging the community. And so that would be number two, to at least have a seat where youth would qualify and to make it a 16 across the board. And number three, you know, neighborhood councils, some are quite simple. I do mean simple, like some of the elections were uncomplicated. Is that a better way of putting it? Some neighborhood councils have a ballot, and on the ballot are the names, and then of those names, you pick the ones you want, like West Hills, right?
Right.
How many ballots do you have? Okay, one. So we can't mix them up. Like, everybody gets that ballot. Some neighborhood councils have as many as 21 ballots, and of those ballots, some of the people that prevailed would get two votes. And the complexity, again, is if there were such a thing as voter suppression, this would be one of the classic ways to suppress the vote. One is with making it complicated to qualify, and then the other one is making it complicated to figure out how to vote. And so our recommendation is that we, somewhere between 1 and 21, that if there were three ballots, like if you wanted to, some neighborhood councils have geographic regions, some have other mechanisms, but three is still a lot more than your coming up election. You go in and you vote. It's pretty simple. It's based on who you are, and there aren't a whole lot of choices. Some neighborhood councils have choices, which the voters didn't understand. They qualify for many things, then they've got to choose which one they want, and they don't get all of them, so it's an either or, but wait a minute. Then they have to do the strategy of, but I have some folks I want to vote for here and some I want to vote for here. And again, the complexity is, I think, an obstacle for engaging people in the neighborhood council process, and there's no greater opportunity than during elections to engage the community in what's going on, tell the neighborhood council story, get them interested about the issues, get them interested in the candidates, and get them to cross into the polling place, vote, and now they've got some ownership in the outcome and are more likely to stick around. The fourth one is to take a more aggressive role in the outreach for the neighborhood council elections, and as the director of outreach and communications, I guess it's my responsibility to handle the outreach. But I have to tell you that in the most recent, and I've been doing neighborhood council elections since I think mid-2000, I think it's where I first met Commissioner Wiebe. It's where I first met Commissioner Schaefer. It's where I first met a lot of the folks here in Sunland Tahunga, for example, was in neighborhood council elections many years ago. But sometimes the complexity of the process prohibits us from digging into the outreach. And it was almost as if outreach is an afterthought. And I would like to think that if we could simplify and standardize a lot of the elements, we could dig into outreach starting right away. Like, we should be telling neighborhood council stories right now, and instead of having more meetings about the complexity of the election process. And I think that number four was for us to just agree that we're going to commit to taking care of outreach for the neighborhood council elections, especially with regards to finding your replacement. And many board members have said, why would I be motivated to go find my replacement? Yes, we can have that philosophical debate, of course, a succession plan or an engaged community or a great spirited election with contested seats. But truth be told, why would you be out there looking for the competition? And so if that was our role, to tell the neighborhood council story and to communicate great opportunities to get involved as a candidate, as a voter, as a volunteer, but certainly as a participant beyond the neighborhood council elections, I think that would be a great thing for us to take responsibility for. And the last one was just with regards to budgeting. So neighborhood councils at the beginning of the year and the new fiscal year starting in 3 months, it's to, again, just position that neighborhood council outreach for elections should just be a constant. And whether it's an election year or not, outreach is, one might argue, not that I would ever argue, but if one were to argue, one might argue that the city charter mandates that neighborhood councils engage their community and make government more responsive to local needs. And it's gotten quite complicated how everybody interprets that. But if you just go back to the very beginning element of engaging the community and making government more responsive, I mean, those are two pretty hearty mandates right there. And so a 20% of your budget for engaging the community does not seem like a does not seem like a significant amount, and it doesn't last very long. And on $37,000, we know it doesn't last very long, and you have to make some hard choices on what you're going to do with that money. But I'd like to think that if we were working with you and you were working with us, that we could make that 20% go a long way. Especially, I was talking with Commissioner Sinclair about partnering with other departments on outreach and communication. So, for example, if we were doing something with regards to a street presence, are we doing it all alone, or could we do it with others so that we're telling the neighborhood council story as many times as possible, especially if it's in partnership with other city departments? And so, in essence, those are the five recommendations that come out of the the online election report. So in the budget ask for the city, city of LA for the upcoming budget year, the department did ask for the money for online voting. And then online voting, as in 2016, would be in addition to the polling location elections. So the polling location elections would still take place on election day, just like before. In addition, there would be the online election, which would be the opportunity to register folks in advance and the opportunity for folks to vote in advance. Or they could register in advance and still show up, which is kind of suspenders and belt, like you want to try it, but you're not sure if you want to jump all the way. So you could register online, you could get your username and PIN number, and just, you could still go to the location. So we had some folks that made it to the location last year. They made it that far. They registered, they got their PIN number, they weren't sure, and they came there, and we said, well, you know, we can just go ahead and move you. No, they said, no, we've come this far. I want that iPad. I want to finish the journey. But of course, since it was the first time, they also wanted to do it in front of a witness and make sure that it works. So I understand, I get it. I'm an absentee voter, and I still carry my ballot in. I don't know. Why? I like getting it 2 weeks in advance so that I can do it the night before, trying to look up the judges quickly, because my wife will guilt me if I vote for a judge without knowing. She makes me look them all up, and then we talk about it, and it's hard, but we do it, and then I still carry them in the next day. So whatever your strategy is, online voting, we believe, gives people another option for engaging. Neighborhood councils, another option for doing outreach, another option for registering in advance. So one of the cool things about the long-term vision for online voting is to build a database of your stakeholders beyond what we have now. And to your credit, and some neighborhood councils have some pretty solid, they've accumulated a lot of contacts. But when you consider the size of the average neighborhood council, I was just talking to Mr. Reiser about the size of the average neighborhood council. And LA County is the largest county in the United States of America. It's kind of a big deal. And in LA County, City of LA is just one of 88. And if you add all 88 together, it's only 60% of the county. Like, there's a lot of people here. And the average, you know, you get past LA and, you know, Glendale, Long Beach, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you run out of big cities, and the average neighborhood council is bigger than the majority of the cities in LA County. That's huge. So you have a huge task in front of you. So we'd like to think that the online, how you doing? We'd like to think that the online elections is an innovation that moves us toward how can we overcome some of the obstacles and barriers we have to engaging folks. Because the average neighborhood council just simply can't afford to throw a party big enough to hold all those stakeholders, or to do direct mail to all those stakeholders on a regular basis, or to knock on all those doors. In other words, it's a huge undertaking. And earlier you were talking about emergency preparedness. A couple of neighborhood councils have actually made a good shot at knocking on all those doors and registering folks. So if you think about it, it's not just useful with regards to elections, but for example, Harbor Gateway North indexed their community for emergency preparedness so that they know where all of the most vulnerable live and all of those with assets they need. So they want to know every nurse in the neighborhood, and they want to know every access challenged person in the neighborhood, and they want to know everybody in the neighborhood that's on something that requires power, because those are the homes they need to go to first if the power goes out or if there's an emergency. Well, so where's that data, and why isn't it we can't use this as an opportunity or an innovation to collect great data so that we can use it for other strategies beyond the election. That's the second time I said beyond, and pretty soon it's going to become a theme because, you know, if we think beyond the immediate topic, there's an innovation or an opportunity for us to really do something great with the data that we're collecting. So there's the quick overview of the report that went council by council with some recommendations for moving forward and a budget ask so that the 35 neighborhood council program could be rolled out to the full 96. And a couple of things, I do know that we're in the neck of the woods that for the last, I think, four rounds, 10, 12, 14, and 16, has gone first. And one of the sore points with Region 1, and I guess the curse of being named Region 1 is you go first. And so that's come up that why do we have to always go chronologically? Why couldn't we move that first? And some folks like to go first, but you know that the one that goes first doesn't benefit from the experiences the others had. And so that's one of the most significant things we've heard from this area, which I know we've got us. Well, is everyone here from the Valley except for, yes, everyone? Yes? Well, ladies and gentlemen of the Valley, so we've heard the 1, 2, 3, and 4 don't want to be 1, 2, 3, and 4 this time around. Heard that one loud and clear. And so we'll mix up the rotation. There was an effort to do everything at the same time, which is a capacity issue. And then there's the benefit of rolling around the city. And so we'd start in your neck of the woods, over the hill, yeah? But, you know, 5, 6, 7, and 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, and then come back to 1, 2, 3, and 4 next time round. So it'd still be a three-month cycle. So I believe that's a pretty good overview of the online election report as tendered to the City Council for the City of Los Angeles.
Thank you, Steve. Any of the commissioners have a question?
Can I ask?
Yes, go ahead. Announce yourself.
Hi, Mr. Fox. Commissioner Maggie Derrett Quiroz. I have a question. Because it sounds like people have to register, so it seems like people won't have multiple emails and stuff, so I understand that. But you also mentioned that everybody does it different, which I understand. Nevertheless, wouldn't it also be better if everybody had it the same, so it kind of has a systematic where it flows, so then like that people don't get stuck? Like, for example, you mentioned that it's easier. I know that sometimes I forget what the person's name is or something like that, but I like them because I saw them at a meeting. Wouldn't it be nice if they had everybody's name and picture also, so people could remember the person that they wanted to vote for? But I think it would be a uniform if every council did it the same, because if everybody does it different, you're not going to understand the issues that everybody's having because everyone's different. And not necessarily that we want everybody to be the same, but we have to find something that's systematically, like the gentleman said, some things don't work and done, but we have so many neighbor councils doing it different. You can't tailor different staff members for every single council. And if we have something systematically, the wheels are turning, things are going smooth, we could go ahead and wrinkle the issues and the problems.
Right. Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's a tough row to hoe, the balance between uniquely representing the personality and character of a neighborhood and at the same time standardizing. And so the trick, I think, is going to be for us to decide what things could be standardized and what things could be unique. And so, for example, Glassell Park Neighborhood Council, you might decide to structure your board geographically. Others might decide to structure it by topics. And that's cool. That doesn't change the ballot structure. Right. But on the other hand, in a downtown Los Angeles Neighborhood Council, for example, people would register, but because of their structure, they qualify for more than one, because you live in one, you work in another, you own property in the third, and you go to church in the fourth. And how do we know what their intentions were? And it was complicated for them. So we ended up taking all of the benefit of an online system and reducing it down into, we still had to track them down, have a conversation, and explain the complexity, And so I totally think, I agree with you that the system, if it, there were some things were synchronized, would be a lot simpler to manage and deliver. And as evidence, I would offer that a significant number of board members couldn't register as candidates or voters correctly and get into the right category because the process of their council confused them. And so oftentimes the unintended consequence of complexity for a particular strategy came with the fact that you just disqualified folks you thought you were including. And so that was a long-winded way of saying I agree with you 100%.
One more comment. My last comment. Maybe coming up with a template of four only. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is, my whole thing is, being around for so long, is if somebody's doing some accountability, okay? So if we only have four templates, then we already know these templates, this is how it works, okay? Four templates. You take this one or you take that one. Valley, Tahunga, Glassa Park, Highland Park, mm-hmm. only four templates. So then like that, if somebody is violating something, red flag, because we already know that that's a violation. Right. But so there's accountability. Mm-hmm. The department has to have accountability, and I'm going to want to put accountability in place.
Excellent.
Any other commissioner?
Commissioner Sinclair. So I noticed that you're talking a lot about building a registry for voters. So currently, they have to re-register every election cycle?
Well, yes. Okay. We do have the data from previous, and it goes to the neighborhood council at the end of the election, but it isn't accumulated in such a way that we could use it. And so this would allow us to, once you're registered, just like when you're registered to vote, you're registered to vote. And so you don't have to re-register every March 7th, or is it March 7th? Like, I'm registered, right? They sent it, and I didn't do anything this year. I got my stuff. And so that would be the optimal, is that for this purpose and for others, how cool would that be, that we would create a network. And so one of the things that, in the spirit of innovations, for the folks that follow elections and some of the innovations. This wasn't an election. I told you I was at SeaWorld the other day with my boys. But it was kind of cool. I bought my pass online. When I went and checked in, they could see that I was new. It was my first time. And the person just holds up the little scanner and took my picture, and I'm now getting a photo ID. Like, how cool is that? And I went back twice, because you buy a year membership, right? Which means I'll use it twice. No, but I went back the next day. It's like, hey, hello, and they recognize me. And I think, how cool is that? I mean, how cool would it be if, like, we could recognize? You said how cool it would be if we knew saw their photo and knew their name. But, you know, you have the sign-in sheets, which people either do or don't sign in. And I'm not trying to suggest that we barcode folks. I'm trying to suggest that we accumulate great data so we can have a meaningful relationship. And then I know that you like to go to the emergency preparedness. Great, you're getting the emergency preparedness stuff. So when we roll out the bins and the jump start or quick start or super start or let's get started program, you know, we know who to call, right? So we'll call Bob and we'll call Len because they spoke on it. But we'd have some mechanism for hanging things beyond now. They fill out the registration form. It's a piece of paper. It's in a box somewhere. What do we do with it? There's sign-in sheets. What do we do with them? So it would be, I think, a first step towards a really cool way to create some networks and collect some data so we can communicate in a meaningful and specific way rather than, we did some broadcast emails, which
Let's
is a great
up,
way to
Steve.
Have a lot of people. What's that?
We're going to have to wrap up your talk. We've got a lot of speaker cards.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm filibustering. I hope you don't mind. So,
I know.
I was inspired. No, but, you know, when you do broadcasts, you end up irritating everyone that didn't want to hear about emergency preparedness. And I can't believe there is anybody, but, you know. And so with elections, you end up, when you broadcast, it's not an effective way of communicating. And this would allow us to, over a period of time, get really specific and communicate with the people that want to hear that specific message. And I think that's a cool step forward. So thank you very much for your time, unless there's...
We've got a number of speaker cards. Maybe you'll come back up.
What's that?
Maybe you'll come back up. I would only point out something that I pointed out earlier. With regards to number three, you should check on Charter Section 904, I believe it is subsection F, and inquire of the city attorney as to their interpretation of that. And the other question is, when somebody registers in the city, as long as they stay in the city, they can vote. If they register for a neighborhood council, they have to remain within the boundaries of the neighborhood council to be able to vote. And the minute they leave, they're still in the city of Los Angeles, but they're no longer a stakeholder in that. So that's the only
call
I'll raise.
Well, that's no different. I mean, if you leave the city of LA, you leave the city of LA. If you leave the city of Vernon, you leave the city of Vernon. The thing, and this, it's an interesting point, the parallel between the city and neighborhood councils. Right now, it's more complicated to vote in a neighborhood council election than it is to vote in anywhere else on earth. And the interesting thing is it's actually more complicated to run for a neighborhood council than it is to run for the California State Assembly. So just to put it out to you there that...
terrible.
What's that? I mean, it's crazy. Straight up, crazy. And so when we're talking about engaging people... the first thing we got to do is remove these barriers to getting involved as a candidate, as a voter, and as a volunteer.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Okay. Lisa Sarkin, there's two requirements with regards to that section. One is that there be a filing, and the second that you be... the speaker for your neighborhood council. In other words, you're authorized to speak.
I'm not going to talk about the CIS anymore because I have too much on what I just
Okay, heard. Then you have 3 minutes to speak
three
to
minutes?
This. 3 minutes.
Okay, I won't have to speak as fast. I'm the past president of the Studio City Neighborhood Council, Lisa Sarkin. I was the president for 2 months before our election, the vice president before then. The reason that the reports were even requested was because Councilmember Krikorian knew what happened at the Studio City election. We were the number 34th neighborhood council that signed up to be online. Because of that, our council felt that we should use documentation because people could cheat. And believe me, they did. But the worst part about the whole thing is there's no way to verify online voting. You never get the ballots, you put in a Public Records Act, and you get nothing. You get a piece of paper that has the number of ballots for each person that was counted by, I guess online, but who knows. So the recommendations, in my opinion, are just something to get your minds off of the real report and what really happened. If you read the 10 pages, then you would see that these six things don't have anything to do with what the problem was at the online voting site for the Studio City Neighborhood Council, leading up to the election, at the election, and after the election. And the biggest problem is the grievance panel issues that went down that they haven't even given us of the report on the other motion. I'm very emotional about this. My whole entire neighborhood council was completely obliterated with ridiculous things that went on. The whole time we've been a neighborhood council, we've had different seats. We have 15 seats on our board. There are so many for employees, so many for residential, so many for... lots of other things, but anyway, so it adds up to the 15. The point being that if you're a residential homeowner, you vote for residential homeowners. But if you're also a member of a community organization that's on our list that we painstakingly make up every 2 years, then you can vote for that also, because a neighborhood council is all inclusive. My husband's a lawyer. He could vote in 16 neighborhood councils because he goes to 15 courts, well, 14 courts, his office and our house. So that makes it confusing as it is. But the whole time up until the online voting, we never had a drop of problems with our seven ballots, ever. We never had anybody that challenged anything at our elections. We had plenty of people voting when we took care of it all of ourselves. But from 10 and 12 and 14, it wasn't quite as much because we didn't have a lot of deals going on. But this year we had people who lied on their registration forms, even at the polling place, which is the only documentation we were allowed to get because that's the only thing that's paper. So we said, okay, send us anything about the online election online. We'll look at it online. Never got it. Totally ignored by the mayor, totally ignored by Mr. Wesson. Councilmember Krikorian put forward these two motions, and we end up with this report with six recommendations that basically have nothing to do with the online.
Thank you. Okay. Judy Price.
I will not only ditto her, and I won't repeat myself from the last time, but it frightens me to hear the concept of changing the makeup and character of neighborhood councils to accommodate online. The whole thing with regard to neighborhood councils is supposed to be distinctive and unique to their individual communities. To suggest three ballots, four ballots, pre-registration, and so on, is totally ignoring what the charter intended for neighborhood councils. It's the tail wagging the dog here. Online is hard to verify, and that's something that Lisa pointed out. You cannot verify the voting. If it's not a verifiable election, how can you trust an election? You know, that is absurd. It's not only illegal in California, no other, you know, county, city, state allows online or electronic voting. Why neighborhood councils are the guinea pigs here is ridiculous. It takes away from the individuality and self-governance of neighborhood councils. I urge you not to even consider mandating and standardizing the bylaws and, you know, governance of neighborhood councils.
Thank you, Judy. Cindy Cleghorn. Cindy?
Cindy Cleghorn, Sanlitonga. Just a few things really quickly to repeat that neighborhood councils are unique. You know, when the neighborhood councils started and certified, we spent years getting certified. When each neighborhood council went through a long, long process to make their neighborhood councils, board structures, and how the voters were going to vote unique. Don't ignore that. Don't throw that away. To some of the points that Mr. Box was making with regards to helping folks figure out how to vote and bringing documentation to the polls, we've always had that in our neighborhood council, and people come to expect it. Standardizing the age of voters, we have always had a 16 year by age 16. Simplifying outreach and partnering with other departments. I've heard this for years about getting city departments to partner and help neighborhood councils. Old story, and all good, but make it happen. And only recently, in more recent years, have we had more of that. Neighborhood councils need to work on their credibility, and to have their credibility bump up, they need to show that they're representing all of the stakeholders. In what I have unfortunately had to see is our outreach be very limited in Sanlitonga, sadly, with the change in the election this past term. We're not getting out. We're only relying on one single source in our community, unfortunately, right now, and that's Facebook. And not everybody uses Facebook. So we're not SeaWorld, and the database with regards to stakeholders and trying to collect more data so that you can keep it or do your own outreach or have the department or the city do their own outreach in communities. Nation Builder was the tool that was provided to us or introduced to us. And with that data, people did not want to keep being pounded by neighborhood councils. Their voter registration information is for their voter registration information. So maybe perhaps the neighborhood council system should consider just using voter registration like we are voting in for March 7th. Okay, thank you very much.
Bob?
I read all or most of the full report, and I don't recall whether this was part of it or not, but it has to do with funding for the election. Just as a quick reminder, when Dunn handed out the budget information last year for our annual budget reports reporting back to them how we were going to allocate our budget. There was a line at the bottom that was never explained in writing anywhere. It said elections. I was told verbally that that was going to allow us to carry over funds from this year to next year. I now find out that that is not true. If, in fact, there's a recommendation for using 20% of our budget, we need to be able to roll over funds from this year to next year to reach that 20% number. It's extremely important. Thank you.
Clarification? Yes. Are you asking for the ability to roll over funds specifically for elections?
Yes.
Okay. Dan?
Dan Brin, president of the West Hills Neighborhood Council. Okay. Right. So I agree with Bob. It's critically important that we be allowed to roll over funds for election purposes. As for online voting, our experience is that it actually suppressed turnout in West Hills. We had a record turnout the previous year. It dropped by a substantial number. We weren't able to use mail-in ballots. Mail-in ballots worked very well for us. It was really a crazy situation with the online voting. It made people very unhappy, and it laid us open to accusations of voter suppression because ID was required. So I'm willing to keep an open mind about online voting. Maybe you'll get it right this time, but you know, it'll be two strikes if you're out if it doesn't work this time. It has to be simplified. My final point is something that I raised in my last appearance before this board. Also complicates turnout. When the policy, contrary to law, by the way, contrary to the city ordinance, community interest stakeholders are denied that their status because they put all their years of volunteerism and activism in the community into their neighborhood council, and for some arbitrary reason, they're excluded, and is totally contrary to city ordinance, which says that affirms a substantial and ongoing participation in their neighborhood council's boundaries. How can you be more participatory than in the neighborhood council? And there, it's completely illegal, and I just don't understand why the neighborhood council system treats its own volunteers this way. Thank you.
Joanna?
In addition to what Dan said, that we had a member of our board of directors who had practiced, he was a medical doctor and practiced for many years in West Hills and was a very active member of the West Hills Neighborhood Council. But then when he retired and his home is in Van Nuys, they almost denied him to be able to participate as a board member in West Hills Neighborhood Council. He had devoted almost right from the beginning, Dan, all that time and energy into the West Hills Neighborhood Council and almost didn't get to be there. He had to fight. The individuality, the three ballots, I am against the three ballots because I think that denies the individuality of each neighborhood council. Each neighborhood council operates autonomously. That was the whole idea, and that was the connection for me, that my community is very different than Woodland Hills, Canoga Park, etc., all the way around us. And we need to maintain our individuality. We're more inclusive in that we just elect board members, and you don't have to be from any particular area or business or whatever. But that was a drawing point for me. Young voters, we have a board member who just turned 18 and is being honored as a cool kid with ABC. And he has been honored by Street Services for his work on beautification in West Hills. He's been co-chair of the beautification committee only until he turned 18. Now he can vote on financial matters. But you know, there are kids out there who want to be included, and we need to be able to draw to them. In West Hills, we have two private high schools. We have Chaminade and we have DeToledo High School. And many of the kids are not from West Hills. I would say probably about 90% of the kids do not live in West Hills, and maybe it's closer to 100%. They live in Calabasas, Bell Canyon, and other areas that may not be within the city of Los Angeles, but they are contributing a substantial income of what a private school tuition is in West Hills. The city clerk, I've never been able to understand why the city clerk cannot, or the county clerk, cannot tell us who lives within our boundaries of the neighborhood councils. We have different precincts, but being an election inspector, I know that we get street indexes, and they know what addresses are within the particular precinct, so they should be able to determine where people live.
Can I ask you to wrap it up?
One more point. Mm-hmm. If I lived in Vernon and I moved to LA because Vernon did not suit me anymore, but I still worked in Vernon, I have a community interest, or I have a community interest. So just moving out of the city, quote unquote, does not determine that you can't vote or be eligible to vote.
Thank you. Okay. 20 minutes, you say? Okay. Let's go back to 15 then. No, number 6. No. Hang on. Mike, we can do 6 offline if we really want.
Yeah, you can do it offline.
Yeah, we can do that offline. Okay. Okay. We may have to do number 6 offline, but we can do that offline if we have to. That's okay. Huh? Less formal as a... okay. Do we have any members of, for number 7, North Valley Neighborhood Council representatives for number 7? No? Okay. Nobody wants to speak from their North Valley who's a member of a North, a representative of? No? Okay. We do have somebody from the budget advocates. Do you want to represent the budget advocates tonight? Okay. Come on up on number 9. We'll get back to those, yeah.
From the mayor's office.
I just want to, before we look, our commissioner.
Budget advocates, on Saturday, February 25th, mark your calendars, we are having Regional Budget Day. The Valley Regions 1, 2, 3, and 4 will be meeting at the Browdy Center from 9 a.m. to 12. So this is where your constituents can come in and state what their concerns are about the budget and where they think the money should be spent or not spent. That's a big thing. We're going to have breakfast. It'll be probably a continental breakfast, but we will be serving food. So anybody who wants to come for a free breakfast, we will welcome you. And hopefully there'll be parking underneath the building. If not across the street at the Chase Bank parking lot, they let us park there.
Okay, thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. From number nine, we've now gone. We're not. Were you? Did you wish to speak as a representative of a North Valley Neighborhood Council, or?
Is it with the mayor's office?
Yeah, of course you are.
Oh, you know.
That's okay. Don't worry. Don't worry. Getting back to number eight, we're trying to keep it within line. One of our commissioners has to leave. Come on up. Thank you. Introduce yourself.
How much time do I have?
Well, we could give you 15 minutes, but then
I don't need that much.
Yeah.
I just want to.
What? Thank you for coming out here, by the way.
No, of course. First and foremost, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, commissioners. Thank you for being out here and, you know, doing the good work that you do. I'll start off by introducing myself. I know most of you in this room, but, you know, for those of you that don't know me, I'm the Mayor's East Valley Area Representative, covering 17 different communities in the East Valley. Geographically, that's from Toluca Lake, Sunland Tujunga, to the 405 freeway. The mayor said the other day that in terms of population, it would be like the size of Charlotte. So that's kind of crazy. I try not to think about that, because it's okay. But anyhow, in my role, I'm the liaison for the Department of Mayor's Office of Public Engagement. You'll see me out in the community, informing folks on the mayor's initiatives. Also, I'm in the office working on constituent caseworks. Remind you that within the mayor's office, there are several departments, ranging but not limited to, you know, the Office of Public Safety, City Services, our department, Public Engagement, Economic Development, Workforce Development, Youth Opportunity, et cetera, et cetera. So I serve as the liaison that connects the community to those departments, and really any other resources that you might need to solve problems or bring whatever you might need to the community. Some highlights that the mayor has been working on, you know, the Clean Streets has actually been working, and that's actually a highlight, something that I wanted to highlight. So Mayor Garcetti's Clean Streets program is ahead of schedule on the way to meeting his goal of placing 5,000 new trash bins along LA streets by 2019. He announced the milestone a few days ago alongside the Bureau of Sanitation and a team of city workers. So if you guys haven't checked out the website, you guys are probably all familiar with the website and the different ratings. If you haven't, it's a good tool. And also, I want to remind you folks, now with the storms and the rain and everything that's going on, remember to use 311 to report any clogged drains or any city resources that you might have. Report it to 311 first, and if you find any difficulties with that, feel free to reach out to me as a representative or your council district representatives as well. Happy to help you out with any city-related matters. I'll end by giving you guys my contact information, my city cell phone. That's the best way to reach me, either cell phone. You could text me or call me or via email, which I'll share now. My cell phone is 213-713-0960. That's 213-713-0960. My email address is Brian, that's Brian, .gavidia at lacity.org. That's brian.gavidia@lacity.org. I'm here to help. I'm happy. I get energized. You know, it's amazing the work that you guys do. I know most of you have normal jobs as well, but the passion and the dedication and the hours that you put into, you know, the community, it's a lot. I know I get home tired, and I'm 28, so. Right. So congrats to you guys, because you guys energize me. It truly is what keeps me going, right, when I see you guys working hard. With that, I don't know if this is the appropriate time to say a few words to the neighborhood councils that are celebrating their anniversary.
In a couple of minutes.
Okay, cool. Had to ask. All right, well, thank you very much for allowing me to speak. And any questions, concerns? Okay. Well, that's something that we could look into. On my way out, I could take a look at it, maybe take a picture and bring it up and see if it's something that we could work on. All right. Okay. Cool. Go ahead.
I'd like to talk to you about garbage cans, Commissioner Sinclair.
Okay. Sure. Sounds good. All right.
Later.
Thank you very much.
Okay. We will now go to number 10, which is general public comment. Ziggy Cruz? Oh, there you are. Okay. We're hiding.
Good evening, commissioners and community members. I'm Ziggy Cruz. I used to be a Hollywood resident. Now I'm in the West Los Angeles area. But I'm still very much involved, at least electronically, what's going on in Hollywood. And on February 15th, I forwarded an email to the commission about a specific neighborhood council in Hollywood, the Hollywood Studio District Neighborhood Council, who has neglected to follow your policy that you spent months and months and months of time on. That's minutes posting. It's a policy, 2016-01, that specifically lays out what a neighborhood council has to do to post the meeting minutes. Meeting takes place, they basically have 60 days to approve it, then they have another 30 days to put it up on their website. Since May, actually further back from last year, the only minutes to be found right now are from October. And that's not even for their regular meetings, that's for special meetings. So since last year, September, I've been trying, actually before that even, to get that neighborhood council to comply with your policy. Why am I doing your job? Why is Dunn not doing your job? Why is the community your watchdog to go out, find a neighborhood council that just basically blatantly obliterates your policy, just doesn't care? You don't care. Because if you did, and I spoke to Ms. Wiebe earlier, she has a little interest now because she has been made aware of it. This is something that Dunn was aware of last year because they were CC'd on the communication. I received an email saying, well, I don't really look at the CC, send it to me directly. Well, when you get that back, that's a little disheartening for any member of the community. So this neighborhood council, again, HSDNC, since last year, has only 2 meeting minutes posted. Yet they approve budgets, they approve all kinds of fundings. There's no record for the community to look anything up, anything, as to what was approved with that neighborhood council. There is no, what you call it, funding request form with the, when they have to basically put their vote counts on it, nothing. And I see Mr. Schaefer, I'm hoping you're looking up their website right now because you're on your little blueberry there, because you will see the same thing that I saw. There's nothing. Yep. Okay? So at this point, I did a follow-up email. That's the one that I forwarded to you. And I get the response back basically saying, well, treat it as a records request. What the heck? It's not a records request. It's a requirement under your policy. Get off your chairs. Enforce the policy, have the city attorney's office, I don't know if you're part of the city attorney's office, if you are, I never met you, but if you are, please let Ms. Hawkins know that it is not okay to instruct any board council to treat a follow-up email with the requirement that is supposed to be done and enforced by your people to treat it as a records request. That's ridiculous. So why are you guys spending all this time to put all these policies into order and yet have nobody there to back it up and to enforce it? Please figure that out and let me know what you will do with and to the HSDNC. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lisa Sorkin, number 10.
I'm going to ditto every single thing she just said because that's exactly what our neighborhood council is experiencing. I just handed Len 2 different ways that posting is supposed to be done. One of them is on the Dunn's part of the Dunn website, that is 2014-1, saying what you're supposed to do for posting. And then if you click on the commissioner's part of the Dunn website, it gives you the real one, which is 2014-1.1. There's a change there that's quite significant, having to do with posting, whether you post one place and then use your online blast list that Studio City calls it, or whether you have to post in five different places. But the Densite doesn't give you the right thing no matter what you do. It's exactly the same thing that we had in the 2016 election manual, where it told you how to file a change in the manual a different way than it told you on the website, which caused monumental problems. We also have a community impact statement that was filed by Studio City Neighborhood Council that was not voted on, that was not changed. Dunn has known about it for 3 weeks. The first communication I got from SEMI was that the word acknowledges and supports is the same thing, so there's no reason to change it. So when I sent her the definition of those two words, then she decided it should go to a city attorney, and I've been waiting ever since for that to be changed. As of today, they told me they're working on it. Well, I know how long it takes to put in a community impact statement, which takes 3 minutes, and this is significantly different. The Studio City Neighborhood Council did not vote to support the report for 15-0122-1S. They voted to acknowledge that they reviewed it.
Ms. Sorkin, this is for comments to non-agenda items.
Well, this is the community impact statement that wasn't filed right.
As
I
say,
a non-agenda item.
No, if you're speaking about the agenda, about the CIS specifically, and you think it was done improperly, you may address that. But
well,
the content of it is of no moment.
Okay, sorry, I'm telling you it's wrong. It wasn't what was voted on, and the whole entire meeting was recorded. I even sent them where they could see where they voted on what they voted on. Nothing happens. I'd like to know if the resolutions get sent out to the neighborhood councils, because when I was president, I don't think anything happened, and I didn't know if that's something that regularly gets sent out, because there is the change on the one that I just said that nobody seems to know, because it's not the same thing on the website. The website's a mess. It always has been. There's 96 neighborhood councils. None are really, there aren't any that are getting up and to speed. There's no reason why all the people that work at Dunn cannot get anything straight. We're not an experiment anymore, as one councilman told me not too long ago at the last BONC meeting. It's not an experiment. And it's why this valley is still in the city of LA.
You're leaving? Okay, just before you leave. We're about to lose our quorum. We will do the presentations as soon as we adjourn. We can do that. So if we have a motion with regards to adjournment, because we're about to lose our quorum.
I move that we adjourn.
Okay.
With a heavy heart.
I will second that. Any objection to us adjourning? No objection. Meeting is adjourned. We've just lost our quorum.
We have another.
Now?
What?
Huh? No. Okay. We got through what we could get through.
That's disappointing. Sincere apologies.
At least there's.
Do the presentation.
Yeah, we can do that.
As long as there's not going to be any vote.
No, there's no vote. Let me ask you, she can speak to 11C as long as she wants.
Wait a minute, they're conferring.
There's no voting or anything.
Time's up.
Speaker speaking. Something.
Are they speaking on any sort
of
agenda?
Yeah. Well. To 11B, there will be no interplay and no discourse. You may do so. Come on.
Can we come back online?
No.
Oh.
Yeah.
You will be. Pictures and